Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is an opportunity to have engaging conversations that really expand our horizons and empower us with truthful information so we can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And it's great to be back. I don't know how many of you were aware of the fact that I have spent the last 3 months on a lecture tour in Australia and New Zealand, and I just had the most wonderful, wonderful tour. I'd like to thank everyone down under for your warmth, as always. Many of you may also be unaware of the fact that I actually am an Australian resident. I've lived in Australia for about 18 years, and now I just have this wonderful privilege of being able to go back and forth, and if I ever chose to do so, I could go back and live again. So I really love having the best of both worlds. And to all of my very wonderful and devoted organizers, thank you, thank you, thank you for putting together amazing events and lectures and workshops and conferences. It was a really busy time for me down under, and I loved every moment of it. So it's a little surreal being back, I have to say. I'm still getting my molecules all the way back into shape, so I can carry on. But I just really wanted this message to go out to everyone in Australia and New Zealand and let everyone know down there how much I really love and appreciate them, and it was such an honor to be able to be there to support you. So having said all that, we have a great show today. I am really looking forward to the conversation in store with a very special person, Dr. Mark Waldman, and I just want to say I had the privilege of meeting Dr. Mark Waldman when I was participating in the Cure to Cancer Conference in San Diego in April, and we had many fascinating conversations, and I just really was quite taken with Dr. Mark Waldman's work and the profound insights that are emerging from what he has been dedicated to. So it's just a great delight to be able to have him on the show and to know that he's made some special time to be with us today. So before I introduce Mark, let me just say a little bit about him. Mark Waldman has authored 12 books, including the national bestseller, How God Changes Your Brain, which Oprah selected as one of the 9 must-read books for 2012, considered one of the world's leading experts on consciousness, communication, and the brain. Mark is on the executive MBA faculty at Loyola Marymount University and also teaches at Holmes Institute. His research has been published in journals throughout the world, and his work has been featured in Time Magazine, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Forbes, Entrepreneur, and Oprah Magazine. He has appeared on hundreds of radio and television programs, including PBS and NPR, and his TED Talk has been viewed by more than 100,000 people. He received the Distinguished Speaker Award from the Mind Science Foundation, and he travels throughout the world teaching compassionate communication. He recently created a new brain training program called NeuroWisdom 101, 58 lessons guiding listeners through the 6 levels of human consciousness to build positivity, emotional resilience, and work satisfaction. You can reduce stress and anxiety by practicing these mindfulness exercises for just a few minutes each day. And it is now being used in teaching environments, health centers, and businesses throughout the world. So today we have this engaging conversation. We're going to be exploring how to access your brain's power through mindfulness to heal, balance hormones, reduce stress, and become more successful in life. So, Dr. Mark Waldman, welcome to the show today.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I do remember our conversations when we were in San Diego, and I have to say that your research is so leading edge. You're right there on the farthest horizons of understanding and proving through science the role of mindfulness meditation in our lives. So I guess I want to start this conversation by, first of all, asking you, how did you find yourself at the forefront of such research?
I found myself at the forefront of such research by basically feeling utterly lost and confused when it came to any form of psychological or spiritual development. In 1990, I was in supervision with a very famous psychoanalyst named Bruno Bettelheim. And when he died, I had a rather remarkable experience. It just came to me literally in a flash. It said, Mark, even though you've been researching spirituality, religion, and psychology for the last 5 years, you don't know a darn thing about any of that. And I went, oh, wow, followed immediately by, oh, crap, what do I do now? And it started me on an obsessive-compulsive quest to find out what, if anything, really works to change our brains, change our minds, change our personality. How do we get rid of, for myself personally, how do I get rid of this underlying self-doubt and chronic anxiety that I seem to have been born with? And so that kind of mystical experience that I had brought me to the point of literally reading and reviewing about 300 books a year for about 10 years for several academic journals. And in that process, I became connected with Andy Newberg, who was doing brain scan studies of nuns, Buddhists, Pentecostals speaking in tongues. So we began to look at not only the nature of how spiritual experiences and spiritual practices affect our brains and our lives, but in essence, how our whole internal belief systems can literally change our immune system, our stress levels. They can affect our genes all the way down simply by, shall we say, you know, like you can take a particular value word. You can find a word that's very powerful in your life. And if you keep repeating it for 20 minutes a day, this is Herb Benson's relaxation response technique. They have found at Harvard that this will turn on 1,200 stress-reducing genes simply by repeating a single word. That's pretty amazing.
There are many amazing things that you have been revealing in your research. Let me just go back to what you just said. Is that a particular positive word, I would imagine, right? Something that is expansive or uplifting or makes you feel good.
Yes. I mean, it's very easy to know what the most dangerous word in the world is. I can put you into a brain scan machine, and if I flash the word no for less than a half a second, we'll see more stress neurochemicals being released in the brain than I know how to pronounce. Yeah. But the most powerful, most influential word in the world, I cannot tell you what it is, but I can tell you and all of your listeners how to figure out what that specific word is.
Okay. You've got our attention.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask all of our listeners a question, too, that turns out to be probably the most transformational question we've ever encountered in our research, and it's also the least asked question in the world. But before I can even ask you that question that will lead to that special word that will really turn on those 1,200 stress-reducing genes, we find that you have to be in a deeply relaxed and attentive state. Now, here's the interesting thing. Many people are engaged in spiritual practices. Many people have had aha and enlightenment experiences. But all of the books that you read about this leave out one particular technique. If you're not fully relaxed, if you tighten up every muscle in your body and make yourself as tense as possible right now, just tighten up everything, your jaw, your mouth, your shoulders, and whatever else, I'll guarantee you, if you are in this state of physical tension, you're not very likely to have any positive experience, emotional, cognitive, or what have you. So what do you think is the fastest and easiest way to relax? Most people are going to say, take a deep breath in. Well, It turns out that taking a deep breath in makes you more stressed. It actually increases activity in throughout your brain in ways that don't necessarily relax you. If you do something different and you take a slow breath in, and as you exhale, you go, ah, and you make that type of ah sound. There's even a randomized controlled study showing that this particular sound is enough to eliminate all of the stress that a person feels when they're going through a life-threatening disease and the treatments that are involved with healing you, for example, from cancer. So I would love you and me and everyone listening just to take a breath in and go, and what you're doing is that you're actually imitating a yawn. And so when you start to make this sound, and you consciously and deliberately make yourself yawn, and yawning is an empathy-inducing experience for most mammals. All kinds of animals will yawn, and when one animal yawns, the other animals in the group or pack will yawn as well. This helps to align everybody's brain together. What it's doing, it's slowing down activity in your busy frontal lobes where all your worries, fears, and doubts are going on. So if you yawn a few times and you slowly, I mean very slowly, move your head, like roll it around, but so slowly that it takes 60 seconds for one rotation, or slowly lift your arm where it takes 60 seconds to bring it all the way up to the top of your head, you'll notice as you move this slowly, the slower you go, the more aware you become of all the tiny little physical sensations involved in a single movement. That brings you into the present moment, and try it, everyone. Either rotate your head very, very slowly and yawn at the same time if you can, or move your arm or twist your toe or so in super slow motion. And you'll notice that as you do this, you cannot experience any worry, fear, or doubt, or even physical pain. So it suspends those neurological circuits in your brain that are associated with pain, unpleasantness, or negativity. So now that you're continuing to yawn and you're stretching your body, there's one other thing that you can do too, and these are all specific guided exercises that we put into our NeuroWisdom program, and we give this program, well, it's actually required course for executive MBA students because it reduces stress throughout your entire workday, and your work productivity goes up. Mm-hmm. So we have you yawn, we have you stretch slowly, and then a new technique that we've just added is that if you lightly begin to stroke your fingertips, the palms of your hands, your arms, in the most pleasant way possible, this releases dopamine in a very important part of your brain. It not only relaxes you, it wakes you up, and it actually increases your desire to take more action in the world. It stimulates the motivation centers in your brain. Yawning, breathing, relaxing, doing things that are physically pleasant, these are the three key elements for deep relaxation. Now, you're in the perfect state to begin to make transformations in your emotional life, in interrupting old habits and behaviors. So I want everyone, unless you're driving, to close your eyes. Somehow, some of our research shows that driving with your eyes closed could be hazardous to your health. I haven't personally tested this one out. It's just an intuition that I have.
Well, maybe that'll be a million-dollar research project for somebody.
Yes. And that laughter that I just elicited in you, that right. also turns out to be one of the best neurologically enhancing tools that we have. So if you can laugh your way throughout every day, you're going to find that most of your worries, fears, and doubts dissolve. And this is what we teach to our, you know, to our students in many countries around the world. Now that you're deeply relaxed, I'm going to do something else. I'm going to ring a bell and ask you all to listen to it as deeply as possible. As the sound of the bell fades away, you're going to be listening harder and harder and harder. What I'm doing is enhancing the concentration abilities of your brain. So what I've been doing for the past 5 years, my challenge is to find 60-second exercises that will change your brain in ways that will change your life in positive ways. As I ring the bell, listen to it, and as it fades away, keep listening harder and harder and harder, and you'll discover that you'll be hearing all kinds of sounds in the room you've never noticed before. That brings you into the present moment. That makes you even more alert. And then I'm going to ask you this very special question.
Okay.
What is your deepest, innermost value? What is your deepest, innermost value? Pay attention to what your intuition says, mm-hmm. and see if you can find a single word to capture that value that gives your life a little bit more meaning and purpose. What is your deepest, innermost value? Cheryl, what's the first word that comes to your mind?
The first word is compassion.
Compassion. Mm-hmm. And the word that came to my mind was peace. And for other people, different words will come up. For some, it could be family or love or God or integrity, honesty. And it really doesn't matter what word it is. When you trust your intuition and you write down all of your core value words, your most innermost values, like compassion and peace and love, your most important relational value words, like being listened to, treating each other with kindness, for example, your deepest work value words, perhaps being honest or having integrity. These value words represent your inner religion, and it doesn't matter whether you're a believer or disbeliever in any theology whatsoever. This is your power word, in essence. So if you repeat compassion, 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 and I repeat peace, 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 or in a group, if you go around the room and just have each person share that inner value, you'll feel an incredible coming together, a kind of a community forming where everyone tends to show deeper appreciation for each other. The repetition of that word is what stimulates 1,200 stress-reducing genes. And you can put it into a affirmation or a meditation formula. I breathe in peace. I breathe out compassion. I breathe in love. I breathe out stress. I breathe in, I breathe out. And you repeat this type of meditation and any variation you want to create for just 60 seconds a day, not 60 seconds once every hour throughout the day, you'll find, as we find with literally 95% of our students, that your stress levels at work will drop, your interest in your work will increase, your work productivity will increase, your creativity will increase, your interactions with other people will be more cooperative. And if you do this for 8 weeks, and we brought you into one of our brain scan labs, and we took a picture of your brain, we would see fundamental changes in both the structure and functioning of your brain. We'd see those areas that are involved with empathy and compassion and social awareness becoming stronger in your brain. And after years of practice, you can actually see structures like the amygdala that generate worry and fear they actually shrink a little bit. It actually becomes more difficult for you to get angry and upset. So that keeps you more calm and more peaceful. And this type of stress reduction is considered in the medical community to be the number one cure and prevention for virtually any disease that you can think of.
So why, this may seem like a very kind of obvious question, but what is it about doing those exercises that has such profound impact in every aspect of your life, really?
Well, for one, it's turning you from external values. Many times if you ask a person, what do you desire? They may say, I want a better relationship, a bigger house, I want to take a vacation. Basically, it's a neurological fundamental truth. The human brain actually puts money, money just turns out to be one of the most exciting things for the human brain. I can put you in a brain scan machine, flash a coin for 1/20th of a second, and whatever activity you are doing, you become more motivated in doing that activity. That's how powerful money is in the brain. So as children, we have a lot of external values. We have a lot of external desires. We want more friends. We want more toys. We want more food on our plate. We want more ice cream, for example. But these are momentary pleasures, and they fade away very quickly in the brain. Now you bring in the researchers in the field of positive psychology, and they find out that as you focus on intrinsic values, when you focus in on those words, those abstract concepts that give your life meaning and purpose, and you devote yourself to those internal values, that's what creates life satisfaction across all demographics.
So this really is the merging of science and the spiritual journey in one's life. I mean, you're really validating what the sages, what Buddhists, all religions have been talking about for eons of time, of how to get back into those real intrinsic values.
Yes, but there's a big difference. Normally, and Buddhism is an exception to this rule, normally most religions will tell you what values you should adhere to. Our research shows that there is an internal spirituality, and spirituality is by definition those values that give your life purpose and meaning, those beliefs that you hold, that if you didn't have them, life would kind of feel empty in some particular way. So what we're suggesting is rather than to take somebody else's words about what your belief should be, you can actually use these neurowisdom strategies, these mindfulness strategies, to interrupt your entire system of beliefs. Because a belief is something you've learned from the past. You had some aha experience, you learned something, you built a belief system, trees have leaves that are green, and you get in and you just start to believe that. And then you pick up a science magazine and find out the color doesn't exist in the world, and you go, what? And then you find that you have to interrupt all of your old beliefs. So what we're trying to teach people, and what I'm trying to teach people with these neural wisdom techniques, that if you just take a few minutes, a couple times a day, and come into the present moment and interrupt all of your habits and behaviors, all of your old values, all of your old beliefs, in that moment, people begin to have what Andy Newberg and I call enlightenment experiences. You begin to see the world in a new way. You begin to see yourself in a new way. So if you're walking around with anxiety or low self-esteem, if you're worrying a lot, if you feel unhappy, these are basically thoughts. These are memories from the past that you're pulling up and projecting onto the present moment. And we're teaching people through neurowisdom and mindfulness and positive psychology that it's very easy to interrupt them the moment a negative thought or feeling comes up. And all you have to do is Again, take a slow breath in, roll your head around, yawn a few times, become very relaxed, and you just watch how those positive and negative thoughts constantly flow through your mind. Now, neuroscience adds something very interesting to this. It turns out that our right prefrontal cortex tends to be the pessimist, and our left prefrontal cortex tends to be an optimist. But here's the thing about human consciousness and awareness. It's like looking through a little tiny hole in the screen. You can only see a little tiny bit of reality, so you have a choice. You can either focus on your negativity that's going on all the time, or you can focus on your positivity, which is also going on all the time. Both your optimism and your pessimism are fantasies. They're simply attitudes you have about what the future will bring. But it's clear from research study after research study that if you arbitrarily train yourself and force yourself to remain optimistic, your financial wealth increases. People are more attracted to you. The quality of your relationships improve. It really changes the entire way in which you see the world, and that changes the way in which the world responds to you.
And this is why your work is so profound, because what you are providing is a very simple roadmap that allows people to take charge of experiencing their life in a way that will support their sense of well-being, their health, their productivity, and to know that it really you don't need years of psychotherapy because it will never work anyway. You're really sharing with us something very profound, and if applied, if people actually follow what you've just shared with us, doing the breathing and doing the, you know, breathing with aha and doing the yawning and the very slow turning of your neck and movement of your arms and the stroking, very slow stroking of your fingertips. If you practice that on a daily basis for just 60 seconds, and I gather as many times every, you know, once an hour, have many hours you're willing to do that, you can actually rewire your brain to create a more productive, happier, fulfilling life.
In a matter of weeks. And you brought up something very important about psychotherapy, too, because, you know, I've been a therapist for 35 years, and I didn't realize until recently that we've been making a fundamental mistake. Think for a moment. Why would you go, what would be the basic reason why you would go to a therapist?
Well, I would go to a therapist because I have problems that actually I don't know how to resolve and get to the
emotional state
I want to be in.
You don't have to say anything more than that. So you go in and you say, I have a problem. Then what does the therapist ask you to do? Let's explore that problem. Let's talk about that problem. Matter of fact, let's re-experience that problem. Tell me all the times in your past and you've had that problem. What we didn't know back then is that neurologically, every time we talk about an old problem, we stimulate the old memory and we actually deepen the problem. We entrench the problem more into our life. Freud didn't make that mistake. He said, basically, simply by reflecting on your past, you go from being utterly miserable to merely unhappy. I think we can do a lot better than that. So here's what's missing from psychotherapy and what positive psychology and transpersonal psychology has attempted to bring back in, and now mindfulness-based psychotherapies. In this process, you spend as much time, if not more time, focusing on all of your accomplishments and strengths as well as your weaknesses. So one of the neurowisdom exercises that I guide you through, and in each one of these exercises, we use the bell, you're staying relaxed, we're doing a brain entrainment strategy. You sit down, and this is my favorite time of the year to do this, is during the month of November and December, when a lot of people feel a lot of anxiety and depression during the holidays. You create what I call an accomplishment board, and you write down every large and small accomplishment that you've achieved in the past year. Mm. You'll find it's very easy to end up in a few minutes with like 20 things on your list. And as you get down to that 20th list, I don't care how anxious or depressed you're feeling, you're going to feel so good looking at all the things you've actually accomplished. And this is the thing that's been missing from psychology and psychotherapy for all these years. You can make a list of all the transformational experiences. Just think for a moment about a book that you read that inspired you, transformed your life, opened you up to seeing the world in a whole different way. If you pull up that kind of memory, you should feel a tingliness going through your body right now. So I just created what's called a life transformation inventory. It's not in the NeuroWisdom program because we're constantly evolving and growing this program. And you do that. You share with a friend 20 life experiences that opened you up, made you grow, that gave you that aha experience. When I did this with my wife on Father's Day, I was asking her, I was saying, I wonder if we really change at all. And she asked me to go through my own life and talk about those transformational moments. By the time I finished telling her about this, about 30 minutes later, I stayed in this blissful state for about 6 weeks. Mm. It was remarkable.
You know, it is remarkable. And we need to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about your research and the validation of these exercises, which is what I find really unique, because you have been going in, doing the brain scans. You can see and absolutely witness the changes by doing such simple exercises as you were describing previously. And I think that's what's so unique about what you are doing and your contribution. So let's just stop right here. We'll take a quick break. And then we'll come back. We have more to explore. And I know you've been talking about some of the recent work with cancer. And I'd like you to talk about that, healing cancer, and lots more. So hang in there. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. We're having this absolutely fascinating, enlightening conversation with Dr. Mark Waldman. And we will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And today we are talking about the role of mindfulness and how our brain, when used correctly through mindfulness techniques, can profoundly change our perception of the world. And to help us understand this leading-edge research that's validating the role of mindfulness is my guest today, Dr. Mark Waldman, who has authored 12 books, including the national bestseller, How God Changes Your Brain, and he has developed the NeuroWisdom program. So if you want to learn more about this amazing program that can literally transform your life, your health, your brain, go to neurowisdom.com. and learn about this extraordinary program, which I have started, but I must admit I've been traveling for 3 months, and now I'm back, and I'm going to really jump into your program, Mark, because it's just a key. It's a key to create the kinds of transformations and fulfillment in, that we're all looking for that, you know, is so easy to do.
And what I did was to distill some of the core principles undermining mindfulness, other forms of meditation, positive psychology, and some of the best techniques used in cognitive therapy. And by creating 58 lessons that are all very brief, by the time you finish the program, what you have is a template where you can build your own personal mindfulness or meditation practice, because we find, for example, when you create your own exercise regime, you're more likely and more committed to carrying it through. Same thing with weight loss. If you create your own diet plan, if you are the driver in control of your car, you will get better results. And the same thing holds true for cognitive, spiritual practices, meditation, and all the rest of this. So you can mix and match from any of the strategies that are out there, as long as they're positive and give you that warm sense of tingliness inside. They are elements that are incredibly good for your brain.
So can you share some of the brain research, because you've been doing functional brain scans and looking at meditators and, like you said, people who, when you flash just a coin or flash the word no, you see the changes in the brain. What are some of the most profound revelations that you have become aware of through your research and using functional brain scans to see the changes that go on within?
Well, some of the changes that we see that take place, and it doesn't matter whether that's one of the most interesting things, is that you see rather the same neural activity with a group of Tibetan Buddhist practitioners who are focusing on pure consciousness, and then you compare the neural activity with a group of Franciscan nuns who are simply attempting to feel closer to God and to feel God's love, you see almost exactly the same type of activity in the brain. One of the things that you see is that you see the areas right above your eyes are called the frontal lobes. This is where your decision-making processes take place. This is actually where consciousness begins. So what you are aware of right now is going to show up as this little tiny blip in two areas about the size of your thumb above both of your eyes. Called the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Would you like to try to say that one three times quickly? But what we see is that the longer you engage in a contemplative, self-reflective, mindful practice, whether it be repeating of your value word or focusing in on I breathe in peace, I breathe out love, or reading a passage of scripture that you feel particularly close to, we begin to see that the frontal lobes become more and more active. It begins to spread across your whole forehead. And when this happens, it begins to tap into the creativity centers of your brain. So these are the areas that allow you to look at yourself and life through a different lens. It may or may not be more or less true, but it is a creative process, and it's within that creative process that those aha experiences and insights begin to come in. Now, the more active your frontal lobes become, the more it suppresses activity in the emotional centers of your brain, your limbic brain, the amygdala, the fight or freeze part of your brain. So we will see in our studies and in the many other studies that have been done on different types of affirmation, mindfulness, and meditation practices and deep prayer practices, we'll see that areas of emotional negativity begin to decrease. We even see that shift. If a person is somewhat depressed or somewhat anxious, you see more activity in the right frontal lobe. And as they begin to do these mindfulness and neuro wisdom practices, you see activity decrease on that side and increase on the side of your brain that's involved with optimism and positive confidence and self-esteem.
I just find it so extraordinary that you are able to validate and just the willingness to have the discipline to put those simple practices into practice in your life can be so profound. And I know so many people are searching and looking and feel unhappy or feel overwhelmed with the stresses of life. And what, you know, what you've created and are offering is actually a very simple way to start retraining the brain, because the truth seems to be we have to create some effective program or discipline that is going to teach us or reprogram or restructure, however we want to say it, our consciousness to learn to be happy.
And doing brain games and, you know, mental exercises that help you, you know, there are many kind of automated brain games that are out there right now. They do help you increase your memory and focus, but to a very small degree. So, for example, sometimes the advertisements will say you'll be able to return your brain to the functioning of a 25-year-old. But what the studies don't say, if you read in the fine print, is that for the average 60 or 70-year-old person, you already have the brain of a 27-year-old. So I don't necessarily know if going from 27 to 25 is an improvement or not.
Right.
Considering the wisdom that we get as we age.
Right. So what have you been learning from these techniques in the realm of cancer and supporting people in healing cancer?
Well, I'm holding in my hand 27 peer-reviewed studies published in some of the most prestigious journals, and each one of them shows that these types of exercises that I've been talking about and these mindfulness-based exercises have profound, consistent effects. These aren't just single studies. These are meta-analytic studies. These are studies that look at the hundreds of studies that have been done. And we're at the point of saying now that we believe that mindfulness has got to be probably the number two most powerful way to improve any discomfort, disease, emotional, or physical problem that you have. And I'd like to just cite a couple of them right here. For example, it will reduce blood pressure. It will lower cholesterol, anxiety, stress, and pain. This is published in the Clinical Journal of Oncology Nursing in December of 2013. These mindfulness exercises will improve your sleep quality, and that's published in the Pathology Biology Journal. Reduces anxiety and fear, psycho-oncology, December 2009. That's a randomized controlled study. Mindfulness enhances immune function, psycho-oncology, July 2011. It will improve your mood. That's the Oncology Nursing Forum of March of 2011. It will lower stress. It will reduce depression. It actually reduces attention deficit problems. That's a, you know, that's a study that was recently published in 2014. They will prevent work burnout. That was published in July of 2014, just last month, in the annals of the Academy of Psychiatry. Mindfulness helps to eliminate bad habits. That's a randomized controlled study done in 2014. It actually hasn't come out yet. It's just about to be published, but you can get a lot of these online if you go to PubMed.gov. It'll reduce eating disorders, and several of the NeuroWisdom exercises I've put into this program will help you do that. Simply by slowing down, you take a piece of food, you gaze at it as if it's an object from another planet. It's like a slice of an orange, and you hold it up to the light, and you see all of the beautiful colors, and then you you smell it very slowly. You savor it as if it was a fine glass of wine. And then you hold this morsel of food on your tongue for 20 seconds, and you'll discover incredible flavors burst forth. Many times, items that you think you love turn out to taste a little bit sour, which is proof that normally we are eating our memories and not taking the time to actually experience the flavors of the food we just put in your mouth. So when you do this process called mindful eating, Andy Newberg and I and Gene Christeller, we did the first brain scan study on what's affected in the brain when you eat mindfully, when you slow down like this. And we see that a structure called the caudate nucleus lights up. And this is the part of your brain that gives you conscious control over your actions. So mindfulness gives you a stronger choice. If you want to interrupt a bad habit, these are very simple exercises that you can do simply by coming into the present moment, observing your negative thoughts. You say to those negative thoughts, these thoughts are just memories from the past. They are not real. You can actually repeat that when you're having a particular negative thought going on. And one part of your brain actually listens to every thought that you have. It's a very weird thing. Every single thought you have, positive or negative, is fed into your thalamus, which is kind of a sensory processing mechanism in your brain. So Andy and I have put forth the hypothesis that the thalamus deals with your thoughts the way it deals with any other sensation. In other words, it doesn't recognize a thought as being false. It just assumes the thought is objectively real. The same way if you taste something sour, that's an objective feeling. You bump into a table. That pain that you have is an objective reality. Parts of the brain just can't tell if your thoughts are real or fantasy-oriented. So if you're worrying about something, another part of your brain is going to assume that that worry is actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you can easily interrupt that by imposing a positive thought on top of the negative thought, because consciously you can't hold both thoughts at the same time.
And that's where the practice and the, I see it as the discipline of putting some of these simple exercises into one's, you know, daily routine is really going to allow us to make those choices. We'll be able to step out of negative places that are creating the stress, that does challenge our health, that does challenge the possibilities that are open to us in this lifetime.
And here's one of the coolest things. Something people have brought mindfulness practices into the therapeutic room. It certainly is a large part of the medical community now, because adding these mindfulness practices helps you recover from any form of injury or trauma or operation or disease you might be struggling with. Mm-hmm. It even appears to be rather preventative for nearly every form of disease, because it stimulates the immune system. It'll actually turn on about 1,000 immune-enhancing genes, as some of the new studies out of Harvard and other universities have demonstrated. But here's the really cool thing. Can you bring mindfulness into your conversation with others? Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to do. We actually have a very fun game, and again, this is part of our core training program in our executive MBA program, because if you can't communicate effectively with other people, your business is going to collapse. But people speak too many words, too fast, and the listener's brain can only hang on to about 10 words at the maximum before it zones out. So we ask people to make a fist, hold their hands up in front of them. Now, you must speak, raising one finger for each word, and then stop when you run out of, oops, that was 14 words. When you go back and forth like this, when you arbitrarily speak briefly and slowly, mindfully, savoring each word that comes out from your lips, it turns out that your brain, literally within 5 or 10 minutes, begins to select much better words. You can solve problems sometimes before they even come up. We teach this, for example, to mediating attorneys and therapists. You can take two people. You have them, you ask both of them, who they're deeply in conflict with each other. They hate each other. They want a divorce as fast as you possibly can. You ask them what their deepest innermost values are. You ask, are you willing to respect that in the other person? The other person's going to say yes, because hardly ever does a person come up with a value that's not universally respected by others. Now, each person and the mediating attorney says one sentence in less than 10 seconds, and you keep going round table, and you can solve most problems in 20 minutes that would normally take three attorneys about 4 hours. So you do the math, you save yourself several thousand dollars simply by speaking slowly and briefly.
Wow. But you know, I love all this. I think this is so profound, because the answers are so simple. You know, you're really giving us very simple solutions, and now you have me talking very slow, Mark.
Well, you don't want to do that all the time. If I was to talk like this from a stage, I am going to put to sleep everybody. But, no. So you learn how to play with your words. Sometimes you can raise the energy. You can lower it. Here's the thing. It's the tone of your voice and your facial expression that has a far more powerful effect upon your brain than the words themselves. If a person's words do not match their facial expression and their tone of voice, that's a clue that they're either confused or they're lying or being deceitful. Something's amiss. And so, I mean, we wrote a whole book on this. Words can change your brain. And that's where, again, we teach this, you know, to colleges and business students around the world. We just take them through a one-hour training program where they speak very slowly and briefly to each other for about 20 minutes, and then they share their experiences with each other. And that's how quickly you can learn to change communication habits that are 20 or 30 years old. That's what blows me away, is how easy it is to change the brain if you make the exercises simple and you do them slowly, consciously, and deliberately.
Well, that's it. It's very simple. And I would imagine people are experiencing the changes very quickly. Their responses change. Their ideas improve. And that's really what the goal is of your work.
And underlying it all means what you are doing in mindfulness is that you're suspending the normal way in which you think for just a few minutes. That momentary break, it's like when you're concentrating on something, if you were to close your eyes right now and deliberately allow your mind to wander, it'll start to daydream. And daydreaming turns out to be one of the most important things for us to do when we're learning new material. So you can imagine how some of this neuroscience is going to change the way in which we educate people in the future. You can only give them 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of new material, then you're going to ring a bell like I rang earlier, for example, and you're going to ask a person to relax and yawn and daydream for about 20 seconds, and then I'm going to ask them to just make a few intuitive notes in their workbook or journal, and suddenly you have dramatically improved memory consolidation and memory recall. You now learn better. You now learn faster. You can now incorporate more information more easily. And all I have to do is go back and kick my third grade teacher who yelled at me for staring out of the window when she gave me too much information for my little tiny mind to hang on to.
So it's really being able to understand that you can talk in a different way, get a different response. You can spend a little time just doing some slow breathing, and you can change the state you're in. You can change the stress levels that you are experiencing. I think every lawyer, every corporate person should be learning what you're doing, because it's such a stressful world we live in. We actually all really need to learn these techniques.
Well, it turns out that the corporate world is running with the NeuroWisdom program faster than the psychotherapeutic world is, which is what we created it, you know, originally we created it for. In the business world, they simply want to know what works. If it works and people are happier in their job and they're more cooperative, personal income goes up, corporate income goes up, that's a win-win situation.
It is. And I just think of people who are also struggling with health issues or financial issues, that, and even people who have, any fear of whatever, that this is a technique that can give them the way out. They can actually shift their state, shift their space, and literally change the brain.
Right. And when you enter these states of mindfulness, what happens is that you interrupt worry, and this frees up, again, the decision-making processes in your right frontal lobe that help you come up with effective solutions to the real problems that actually exist. So one of the first steps in the NeuroWisdom program is to help a person recognize the difference between a fantasy worry and a genuine concern.
Right. So let me give that website again, because I think And I hope people listening will check out your program. It's a wonderful program. I am so excited about what you're doing and what you put together for us. So the website is neurowisdom.com. And,
yes.
NEURO wisdom.com. So I encourage people to go have a look there, because you have been so committed, Mark, to sharing with all of us out here in the world real solutions that allow us to live a happier, more fulfilled life. And I am so grateful for the wonderful work, the wonderful research you're doing, and how you've put together these programs. So I want to personally thank you.
You're welcome. As a special gift to your listeners, if you go to my own website, which is markrobertwaldman.com, there's a little ebook there that I'm happy to send you of the 10 most amazing discoveries we've made about the human brain in the last 10 years.
Oh, that's great. markrobertwaldman.com. Mark, it's been a pleasure having you with us today. All the best.
Thank you so much.